Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the CanadianGameDevs.com podcast. This is episode number 240 going live for our patrons, June 12th, 2024. Everyone else, June
14th.
Very happy to have special guest all the way from the West Coast, David Bogoslavsky. David, how did I do with that last name?
Pretty close. Bogoslavsky, yeah.
Bogoslavsky. Ah, man, because on episode 239, Eric was telling me I said it way too confidently, and I don't know, I felt it in my heart a bit. It reminded me of, and I was talking to my girlfriend a bit, have you ever seen the movie Coraline?
Yeah.
You know, the upstairs character, Mr. Babinski, the neighbor? It had that, like, jovial Eastern European feel to it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much for joining us. Steve is still AFK while, you know, bringing another child into the world or whatever apparently takes up a lot of your time.
Oh, what? Nice.
A couple of teasers for the site. I know, I don't know if you knew this, but we have on our site, our probably most visited section is the studios list. We break it down by province, except for the territories in Atlantic. We just group them all together. But we just rolled out a new visual upgrade to that section of the website that uses cloud tables to make the searchable, filterable list. We're not entirely sure how that's going to affect our SEO, because like the old way we did it was like hard-coded into the website. So when you searched like Digital Extremes, it pulled that website. And this one's hosted on a cloud table, so that might ruin our SEO. But it's way nicer to use, so we're rolling with it. Nice. So that's Dive Now, CanadianGameDevs.com. Check that out. We'll put, I guess, is Quiver Games a game studio, or should I say more of a games organization or partner?
Yeah, we're a nonprofit based in Vancouver.
Resource.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So yeah, that's up live now. Super excited. Eros helped us with that, the maker of Highlighters, Ottawa-based indie dev. And we're also excited to say Canadian Game Devs is going to XP Game Summit, so that's happening in Toronto, June 13th, 14th. So we're hoping to find some other Canadian studios, play their games, maybe get them on the podcast to talk about what they've learned. So excited about that. David, the top of the show is when we like to plug some jobs and events. You have an event coming up at the end of the summer, or all throughout the summer, I should say, but a closing deadline approaching June 14th for the Quiver Games Guild Game Dev Incubator, is that correct?
Yeah.
I'll get you to talk about that at the end, but I'll just say at the top, we have a new job to plug, also from Vancouver, Happiness Interactive. They just formed recently, I believe, to secure some funding. They're looking for a senior gameplay programmer, ideally in Vancouver, but remote anywhere in Canada, and also Humanoid Origin. They're all those former BioWare devs. A bunch of them made a studio, and they're hiring all their senior devs. Kelowna, BC, Edmonton, Alberta, remote anywhere in Canada, canadiangamedevs.com/jobs. All the same events we plugged last week, Game Summit, Toronto Games Week, the Games Discovery Exhibition, but we're here to talk about the Game Dev Incubator, Quiver Game Developers Guild event coming up Saturday, July 6th, Saturday, August 3rd. I got that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Excellent. David, tell me about it. Why should people sign up, and what are you offering?
With Quiver, we're helping... basically aiming for new devs and those that want to get into gaming that didn't have a chance to yet, to do like what they need to do in order to get the job opportunity in the first place, which is creating those very valuable portfolio materials that they can use for work. Mm. The Quiver Game Incubator is a really just an extension of like previous Game Jam and like other kind of like business oriented events that we did in Vancouver, in a way that we're giving like members, if they are selected, there's a robust selection process in order to get in. You need to apply, and then by June 14th, and then we'll have interviews and stuff like that, get you a platform where you can collaborate with other people. If you don't have other developer friends to do stuff with, we form you into teams in which you can get all the roles that you need in order to make a game happen, with full art, music, like programming and design, as well as give you all the business backbone in order to like make sure that the project that you're making is also viable as a game product. as well. So this is perfect for people that want to expand their portfolio and want something more ongoing and in person, in which that they can contribute. We're going to have weekly sessions in downtown Vancouver in a very, very fancy Northeastern University campus.
Hell yeah.
And we have a cohort, a group of around like more than 20 industry mentors at this point from all manner of roles, all manner of seniorities, and like both triple A's, double A's, indies, as well as fellow students even, to help out, give perspective, and like give you the context on, that you need in order to make games better.
Your incubating is people's portfolios, is safe to say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I would just say, to throw my voice in there too, yeah, your portfolio is way more important to getting a job than your degree, than like anything else, honestly. It's just showing that you know how to make games, and if you can show that to a bunch of people who make games, they will hire you to make their games. It's that easy. And this seems like an invaluable opportunity to have more experience. I see a lot of like indie prolific indie devs, I should say, who have a lot of experience, like senior directors in different departments, do stuff like this on like their Patreon and stuff. Like they'll do every month, they'll take on like 10 people and like look at their portfolios and meet them twice a week to go over what they could do to improve to get a job. And this seems kind of like that on a bigger scale with like a game maybe at the end of it, like a game jam almost.
Yeah, it's like I like to pitch it to potential members. Like it's a game jam, but long and more intense.
Excellent.
That's what it is. We have like milestones every week, in which people will be required to like actually have like deadlines to push towards and work towards as a team. Too, like the people will be pitching their games every week and like seeing like how their game has changed progressively over the program duration. And as well as the opportunity to showcase at the end to like a citywide audience. That's like kind of like the grand finale of this. We're going to have that's the August 3rd date. We're going to have codenamed The Venture workshop. Nice. Series event in which we're gonna have interactive workshops from industry veterans that are coming in, so both to educate as well as kind of give a platform for all the teams that have completed their projects to showcase it to their fellow community members, get feedback, and basically have that event be like, you've done this, then like what comes after? Do you form your own company? Do you work on this game a bit more to polish it up and then throw it in a portfolio and stuff like that? So we want to kind of service all those like streams in which people want to.
That's awesome. Yeah, I like the timeline on your website. Pitching as like this adventure theming is really nice, with like the mountain path and the adventures through the page. But yeah, you have like breaking into five sessions, with that fifth session, August 3rd, being the DaVenture prototype showcase. But yeah, these are all the typical milestones in developing a prototype. You will close the applications June 14th and then select everyone by June 21st. Is that when people can expect to hear back, or would that be later in June?
Yeah, so like we'll have we have our monthly meetup happening on the 21st well, so it's all perfectly timed, as you can
Excellent.
See. So if people are able to show up during that event, that's the like rank up meetup that we have as well. It can be looked through on our website and Eventbrite and stuff in order to find that, which is free. You can free to come. We're just at a bar downtown. Just people go drinking and and talking. Yeah. We'll probably. I want to be able to do a public announcement there. See like what's the final cohort is like, and but yeah, like. The final size will depend on how many applications we get at the end of the day. So we're already increasing it. We're already increasing it from where we wanted to, but we'll see how much. But I don't want to deny anyone that is clearly capable in order to do this, right? So we'll see how that goes.
So the meetup on the 21st down at the bar is free, and also it's free to like sign up and pitch, but will it cost anything if you're selected? Because I saw down the page here there's like the $100 guild fee to be paid after enrollment offer has been extended. So like if you get selected, is it expected you pay for equivalent?
Gotcha. Yeah, so I want to be able to like applying is free. You should do it. It only requires just like maybe 20 minutes of your time to answer some like short form questions. If you're selected, there is a it's kind of like just an event admission type of thing, just $100 per person. And that serves you for the entire four sessions as well as free admission for the venture on August 3rd as well.
Based on what I've seen on those other like Patreon artists and programmers who do similar sort of things like this, they charge like $350 to $400 I've seen a month for their services. So this seems much under market rates for mentorship services for those listening, just in case you see that and get a little, I don't know, there's a lot of students listening, but these many people looking at your stuff and like making you make something in a month that can go in your portfolio is worth that, I'd say. Just to put my, you know, whatever I can behind that.
Yeah, put your opinion on it. Yeah, there you go. Amazing. A Steven stamp of approval.
Oh, the Steve stamp this. And Quiver Games has been, we've been talking and plugging about your game dev events for a while, and it's been cool to have you on finally. Yeah, 2 years ago, what is that, May 2022, did you guys get started?
Yeah, I think our first game jam. So we had our town one events are also like are called incubator game jams as well. So it's kind of like it's a similar kind of model, but in 3 days, type of thing. Yeah, that one was April 2022. We had in at the Home Key co-working space, which is closed now, unfortunately. But we grew since then.
Nice. Well, that's all up on the website, canadiangamedevs.com/events, June 14th to submit your portfolio. Get in there. Get the mentorship. It's invaluable. Well, it's valued at about $100, but I'll tell you it's invaluable.
Yeah.
What's a game you've been playing lately? I'll plug a song from that here to
I've been playing a lot of Hades these past...
That's so funny because Eric picked a Hades song last week. That's perfect. Now back to back Hades. I like that.
nice.
Two news stories for you this week from around the industry. One from Vancouver, related to frequent topic of this show the past couple weeks, Relic Entertainment, which has been having some issues, the makers of Age of Empires, originally the creators of course, Homeworld and then Homeworld 2, and then they got bought by THQ and became THQ Canada, and then THQ went under, and then Sega bought them, and then they became Relic, and then Sega sold them, and they have now, May 2024, received private investment from a UK firm hoping to stay open, but while receiving that investment, they did lay off 41 people a year after laying off 100 people in May 2023. So they seem to be in a very precarious position, but trying to regroup and, I presume, make another strategy game. I don't know, David, do you have any insights or particular fondness for Relic-branded strategy games?
I haven't played any of them, although, like, I have been, like, fan of those type of games. That was, like, my early teens. I was really into RTS games. Yeah, I mean, like that position is like obviously not the best thing to be in, but like I think the overall positive from that story is that like they have independence again from what I gather. So I think that's always good. I mean, like, that it's obviously more pressure on them to do things correctly now, but it's a hopefully it's like a little bit more lenient and more more welcoming for them to try new things and get back in the game.
Yeah, it's an interesting point in a studio's life cycle. Like, they're almost founded in 1997, so they're coming up on like 27, 30 years. That's a long time to be making games, and to still, like, most studios, like, I see an indie team make 10 years, I'm like, wow, that's incredible. So to make like 30 years is impressive either way. But I don't know, the last time they were an independent studio, they made their biggest, most like prolific game ever. So an independent studio maybe gets to do that again, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're like one of the biggest ones in Van, like, even still. So, like, they're like highly monumental here in the space, at least.
And I see them transitioning into do a lot more of, I love, like, some other support work maybe with the other big studios in Vancouver, like Blackbird, because obviously Blackbird's doing Homeworld 3, which Relic knows a lot about, having created. So I forget, maybe, I think they are assisting on Homeworld 3, actually. But yeah, I see just a bunch of talented strategy game devs who could, you know, start assisting on other big strategy games, even if they don't make their own, just to keep the lights on.
Yeah, and I've seen on the news coverage surrounding this specifically, like on YouTube and stuff, and like, I think overall sentiment is very positive on the change. So that's very good.
Part of a trend of as Embracer de-embraces everyone, of a bunch of studios who were independent and then were embraced becoming independent again. So we'll see what comes of all that independence. All right, next news story comes at us from everywhere and is kind of a big shock. This past, what was it, Tuesday, May 28th, IGN Entertainment has acquired the Gamer Network, which is just two funny words. But if you don't know what the Gamer Network is, it is a giant media conglomerate of GamesIndustry.biz, Eurogamer, including all of its six local language editions, Rock, Paper, Shotgun, VG247, Dicebreaker, and Dicebreaker also holds a stake in Outside Xbox, Digital Foundry, and Hookshot, which operates Nintendo Life, Push Square, Pure Xbox. It's like a cascading... you know, it's like the chart at the front of the courtroom when they're putting the crime family on trial, except for the last like 15 years of game media acquisitions. And at the top is IGN Entertainment. I'll just say, David, this affected me personally because I had an interview scheduled with Brendan Sinclair, the managing editor of GamesIndustry.biz, at 2 p.m. on Tuesday, May 28th, because I was going to talk to him about the, if you don't know, Joy Drop in London, where I worked last year. We started the first game dev union in Ontario, and then he fired us all, and so it's going through the Ontario Labor Board to for some unfair labor charges, and I was going to talk to GamesIndustry.biz about that. I email him at like 9:30 that morning, like, hey, Brendan, we still good for today? He's like, yep, sounds good. I hop into a new tab, like, start putting some notes for the interview together, hop back over to the tab, and he emails me an hour later, we all just got fired, no interview today. I was like, what? So I cannot take this news as anything but other than a personal attack by the entire capitalist game dev class to silence me and my story. No, I'm kidding. But this was a big thing that speaks to the further, you know, monopolization of not only the games industry under Xbox Game Studios and other, the two other conglomerates, but also games media under, like, Geo Media and now IGN Entertainment and, like, one other one. So, I don't know, this is crazy. What do you make of this?
Ooh, it's, like, it depends, like, I'm not too familiar with, like, the entire, like, umbrella, so it might be a bit out there, but, like, is it, I guess I'm asking a question back. Do you think, like, is this, like, majority of, like, where people would, or otherwise, besides IGN, would already be getting their news and stuff like that on games, or are there other monoliths that still kind of like stand?
I'm not sure what it is by traffic. Like, I want the chart, like, you know, the chart that everyone throws around for like the grocery industry in Canada, and how it's like a third of the chart is Loblaws, the other smaller third is Sobeys, and there's another couple chunks of like the, I think there is, like, now IGN Entertainment is a third of games media, and it's like Geo Media and then a couple other ones maybe, but I don't know. I'd need to see quantitative data to really know where the traffic's going. I mean, this has got to be the biggest, I believe, games media section now. Like, it's got to be like 30 to 40%. But I don't know, like, how much has left these platforms and gone to, you know, like Patreon and YouTubers and like all these independent ones that have just like sectioned up the mainstream gaming press, like the Protestant church and all this little, you know, denominations, you know?
My goodness.
Like, all the guys broke, like, Giant Bomb broke off of GameStop, and then Jeff Gertzman broke off of Giant Bomb, and the Nextlander guys broke off of Giant Bomb, and like, and all of those guys have Patreons with like 10 to 30K US a month that pay them all to talk about games. So I'm not sure how much traffic is still going to these guys, but it's all going to these guys if it is of the other big ones.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, I don't go to these places for my game dev news, at least.
No, I don't either, to be honest. Well, I know, I pop into Kotaku or GamesIndustry.biz or over to your... Rock Paper Shotgun has some pretty good reviews of PC games, but... No, I haven't really checked IGN or GameSpot daily since high school, to be honest.
Yeah, probably but same.
But it's conglomerating, and yeah, and it's stopping. And but that had an interest. I had an idea because IGN, specifically, not IGN Entertainment the brand, IGN the website, unionized last year, forming the IGN Creators Guild of like 113 whatever people who work there. So now what you have is a unionized game site working alongside, now in the umbrella, all these other sites that are, I assume, going to get put under the same maybe umbrella at the top, like GeoMedia did for all theirs. And maybe that has some cross-contamination with those other workplaces, seeing what a unionized one can look like. But that, I don't know, because that didn't happen when Microsoft bought Raven Square, the QA studio that was unionized, and that felt probably like a similar thing. I don't know. That's my hope, though, is like you could get some bleed over if all these people are talking and in the same Slack channels now or something.
Yeah. I mean, like, it... Yeah, it depends. I don't think the conglomeration is necessarily the best thing, for sure. What interests me the most, I think, is less about like how they're going to report going forward, mostly like how they communicate between each other going forward, and like what does that mean? Like who is like who? I guess it's like it's a truth thing. Like who dictates that? Like how do they review things? Is that something that is like committee based, or is like they are still independent and like to their own opinions, and what is?
I mean, it's crazy. I remember in 20. Do you remember the game A Hat in Time from that European dev, Gears for Breakfast? Yeah, when A Hat in Time came out, it was published by Humble Bundle, and the day the Hat in Time review was published on IGN, IGN's parent company bought Humble Bundle, and so the reviewer had to put a little line at the top that was like, "I know you're not going to believe me, but my parent company just bought the company publishing this game, so I need to put a disclaimer that IGN will make money off of this game, so read this review now with that context." But he's like, "I honestly didn't know that when I wrote the review," and I believed him. But like, now that all of this stuff is conglomerating, and now the company that owns Humble Bundle also owns all these other publications now, right? So all of these reviews are now, I would say, implicated. Because in journalism, like, the appearance of a conflict of interest might as well be a conflict of interest. At least that's what I was kind of taught in Journalism 101. Like, that's how people feel about it. And and so that's, I think, what a knock-on effect of this might be. Like, wait a minute, you own the publisher of the games and the site reviewing the games? I don't know, but it's like when the theaters owned, or the movie companies bought all the theaters in the, like, 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
We'll see. It's interesting times. Well,
we'll see how it goes. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of shifting going on. I think the Embracer thing was the biggest shock that I've ever seen, like ever.
Oh man, yeah, that's true. Our two polar opposite stories: a group de-embracing and then a group being embraced.
Not sure if your communication needs to be embraced or not.
They need to embrace, I don't know, Patreon, I think. That's what working for all their journalists who are quitting. But
yeah.
All that to
go
say.
Go to YouTube. It's fun there.
David, can I tell you about some Canadian games that have come out this past week?
Yes.
Actually, I just have one. It's from Bellwood Studios in Toronto. It's called the... Oh, geez, I should have looked up how to pronounce this. T-L-A-T-O-A-N-I. I'm going to go Tlatani Prologue. It's a Sim City Builder, but it looks... this trailer looks like the old crunchy pixel art city builders, like SimCity 2000 or like... I don't know. It almost like those old StarCraft II buildings, like the super like crunchy pixely ones. It's a free prologue they have out for the game that's kind of just like getting people playing it, getting feedback, and then sort of spinning it up into a bigger thing. But it's already got 50 reviews, all very positive. Fantastic city builder from Headbutt Master. Really fun city builder. Reminds me of Caesar in the Pharaoh games. Those were, I guess, other prolific ones from the early 2000s. But yeah, seems to be doing well, so just wanted to highlight it. What do you think of Tlatuani colon prologue?
Tlatuani. I love that it's like I'm just looking at the Steam page right now. I like that it's like even just like at the very baseline. I like that it's Aztec. I don't see that much anymore. In terms of like game setting wise, so that's really interesting. Yeah, it does look like I recently got the Command & Conquer bundle that EA put out.
It was on sale recently, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was like $12 for like 7 games or whatever.
Incredible.
it was amazing, great. I'll relive my childhood today. It's great. I've been playing Red Alert 3 for a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Tim Curry. But it kind of looks like that, yeah. It kind of looks like that, so like back to those times.
It looks really good. I love that. My favorite thing in these kind of games was to like set it up and get everything running and then hit the like double or triple fast forward button and just watch all my people run around and use everything. And this, the first trailer on the Steam page is just a 3-minute supercut of that city building. It looks great. So anyway, congrats to the team, Bellwood Studios. Sweet. David, we have a section on this podcast we call Wishlist This, where every week I pick 3 upcoming Canadian-made games and we add them to our wishlist to help out the devs. And honestly, we've had some people, guests on the show, haven't wishlisted it. They're like, you know what? I'm not feeling it. And so, respectfully, you can do that. We always throw out a wishlist from the Steves, so we have a giant 1,000-game-long wishlist. But yeah, no, viewers in the past, do not feel pressured at all to add these to your wishlist. Some people's wishlists are sacred, and we like to acknowledge that. But... if you would peruse the page with me anyway, crack open Steam and head over to Infurious by Lucid Rain Studios in Edmonton. And then I do like the movie trailer guy voice for this. Embark on a harrowing descent into the abyss, Infurious, where nightmarish horrors lurk in the darkness. Reclaim the tainted essence of limbo, lust, gluttony, I think these are the 7 deadly sins, and treachery from the horrors that lurk within. Retain your fading soul. So it's a card battler horror game. The art style is kind of like that super like clean white walls, like Unfinished Swan or like Manifold Garden, kind of like abstract art. But yeah, what do you think of Infurious?
Oh, they don't have a video. I'm so sad.
No. No, that is true.
So like I mean I it looks pretty like I that's like so the first image on there, even like the title is like it's like really my aesthetic. for sure. I really like that kind of grim dark kind of churchy type of looks. For sure. I'm a huge fan of cosmic horror. So if there's any of that, or like even like religious kind of stuff, it's really great.
What about card battlers?
Card battlers. I haven't played card battlers in a long time. I don't even know what it could possibly be. To be honest with you, I haven't played
only one of the screenshots. Time. Has cards, but
yeah, it's cards in it. So, and I can't see what it says.
No, this is very early on, but Is there enough on this page for you to add Infurious from Edmonton-based Lucid Rain Studios to your Steam wish list?
I think so. Yeah. My wish list is kind of like I want to keep an eye on this. I'll come back to it.
Content.
Yeah.
All right. Second game today on wish list. This comes at us from Finish Line Games in Toronto. It's Robots at Midnight. Oh wait, I forget. Hold on. What did Finish Line? They just did something big. I played Scully. Scully is a great platformer from 2020. That got published. You're this little skull head and you're all around. It's a good time. This is the next game from them since 2020. Robots at Midnight. Quote, Robots at Midnight will have you embracing the intense combat, unraveling deep lore, and discovering what it means to be human. In this action RPG, explore the world of Yob as Zoe, a scrappy hero searching for her past and protecting her future. So it's got that like really nice, soft art style that like Dauntless has, or like I'm trying to think of another, or you know that Kena Bridge of Spirits game everyone loves.
Yeah,
that
like soft,
yeah, that soft indie game grass that feels really nice. Is that an Unreal Engine thing? Like that seems pretty native to made in Unreal Engine games to get that I nice light in the grass.
Yeah, like Unreal is just like you can see Unreal lighting from a mile away at this point.
Yeah, it looks good though, you know, it looks good.
Yeah, it looks no, it looks
I get
good.
Why everyone's
good.
Using it.
It's not a bad thing. It's only a good thing. Good lighting is like I used to do a lot of lighting in like button 2D back in the day, but like good lighting is makes everything happen. So it's like yes, please more good lighting.
So this game has two videos, two trailers showing off. A lot of like third-person action combat, some RPG stuff, like finding dialogue things in the devlogs and not devlogs. You know, those like BioShock audio diary things. Building and crafting, upgrading your character. And it's kind of like it feels kind of like a post-apocalyptic thing. There's definitely a society in ruin here that we're traversing through and scrapping stuff together to combat monsters that are robotic within. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's really good. I was watching the video just now, and like the music, the background music that they have on the second video is fucking awesome. Two is the announcer voice that they have there was so similar to your voice that you just did.
Oh no!
It's just so funny.
The movie theater guy.
Yeah, the movie theater guy. Exactly that. Yeah. so there's a lot of that. That was really good. I see, like, the moment I see, like, pairing and, like, multi-combo attacks, I'm like, I'm in.
Yes. You get a feel for that. Half a video game is video. Got to put a video on your Steam page.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So is there enough on this page to add Robots at Midnight from Toronto-based Finish Line Games to your Steam wish list?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's so much personality here. I'm very intrigued.
Last game today I want to propose for your wish list is Hell Is Us by Rogue Factor Games in Montreal, Quebec. Now this one doesn't feel indie. This is a very expensive looking game. Right away they got this like fancy 3D AAA water. Like this is one of those CGI trailers at E3 kind of thing. But, quote, if war is the closest we get to hell on Earth, it's because Earth harbors the worst of demons, humankind. I'm sorry, that's brilliant. I love that. No, you just do something like that, I'm in, I'm sold. In an isolated country ravaged by infighting, discover the secrets of your past and deal with the repercussions of a mysterious calamity. So they pitch it as an action-adventure, open-world, single-player game. But this game looks expensive. Like even from the first screenshot, like there's some expensive looking textures on this guy's wetsuit and breathing contraption behind him. It's a tight over the shoulder, third person open world action adventure game. You're in this like really eerie, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I've been reading Annihilation, the Jeff Vermeer book. But there's like some a lot of like weird is fleshy abstract like creatures going on in this world. What do you think, David?
I love this. I love it.
The
anime design is amazing. I love it so much. That's like exactly the things that I like. Like seeing the things that are like objectively so fucking weird
It's very weird. It's
so funny. They look like so weird looking, and it's like, oh, what is that? That's like, that's basically all.
It's a mysterious calamity. It's the repercussions of a mysterious calamity, is all we know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh.
It's the very last screenshot gives me like Metro vibes, like the guys on the couch outdoors under like the you know, Eastern European flag with the AK-47 on their lap. Oh, yeah, it gives me like Metro or like what's the other one? Stalker, those kind of games.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Expected release 2025. But yeah, it's probably one of the most ambitious looking, just from a technical perspective, games we featured on Wishlist This in a while.
Sweet. Where are those people?
Is it enough? I'm interested. Rogue Factor? They're Montreal based.
Oh,
cool. But it's being published by NACON, the French publisher. Their most recent one was that that movie with RoboCop, that RoboCop game everyone liked last year. That was their publisher's most recent game. And yeah, the studio is Rogue Factor in Montreal. So yeah, is this expensive looking Steam page enough to get Hell Is Us from Montreal based Rogue Factor on your Steam wishlist?
I think so, yeah. I'll see more excellent gameplay, though, but I think it's just early. But yeah.
Yeah, 2025, I don't even know if I believe that. If you're saying 2025, no date, I'm like, yeah, next year, I don't know. We're working on it.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. take your time.
Yeah.
Who knows? We might come into a bunch of money in 2025, and then the game gets a lot more ambitious.
Oh, boy.
All right, that's it for Wishlist This. A bunch of these come from people just tweeting them at us, plugging them in our Discord's showcase channel, so check all those out in the Steam description and the show notes. I'll play that second song from Robots at Midnight, or the second trailer song from Robots at Midnight you mentioned, and then we'll roll into the second half of the show.
Sweet.
All right, David, I got a section that I don't know if other podcasts do, but we like to take something that was discussed in our Discord over the past week and discuss it here with someone else who didn't hear about it, because I was fascinated to learn, did you know that all of the fighters in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate have, within 5%, roughly, the exact same win rate based on data from the online Four Glory and like Four Normal and all the online matchmaking.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah.
I had always assumed, based on like all these people making tier lists of like, oh, you know, Splatoon Kids S tier, Sheik's S tier, all these ones are F tier, that the gap would be much bigger. And like, oh, yeah. And you see, and I think there is a different, obviously, I guess, win rate at like a tournament level versus like everyone who plays Smash. But as far as everyone who plays Smash go, the characters win roughly the same amount of time. Like the highest win rate was like, it was like 53 point something, and the lowest one was like 48 point something, to give you that 5% window. But yeah, that's that's insanely impressive. This data comes out, it's from the Smash guy has just started just making YouTube videos, which I really like, and just publishing them on his YouTube channel, which is just called Masahiro Sakurai on Creating Games, with 580,000 subscribers. I assume he had to get permission from Nintendo to talk about this, but yeah, it's just his YouTube channel.
Oh yeah, I saw that. It's so cool.
What do you think?
Yeah, that's like really interesting. I mean, like I play League a lot, so this doesn't like surprise me too much. I think like, even like if League balance is really bad, then like things will drop below 45% right, or something like that.
So there's like there's a more literacy among League players, you would say, about like game balance, maybe.
I think I think it's just those stats are a lot more exposed in League. Right. So like you can just like go on a site and just see it. I'm not sure if it has the same thing for Smash.
I don't believe so. That's what made this newsworthy, was this Barry video he made. Like, this video is yet... Oh, it's a 3-minute video. But, it's in there. They pulled it out, and then a bunch of people wrote about it.
Yeah, it just means the games is, like, balanced well. It's a really good achievement to have, especially, like, oh, how many characters are in Smash. Oh, my God. Like, many.
Yes, all of them.
Yeah, all of them, yeah. Yeah.
That led to some interesting discussion in our Discord. People were like, whoa, really? I didn't believe that. Because I think, it's that vision people have in their head of the Smash tier lists. Like, of course there has to be discrepancy greater than 5%, but nope. And I bet there is, like, the reason Jigglypuff and, like, Ganon and maybe some of these ones win tournaments a lot is because there is maybe a different win rate among elite players, like among the 0.01% of Smash players. There's probably a different win rate for all these fighters, but in the other 99.98% of players, it's this win rate. You know what I mean?
No, yeah, for sure. There's definitely a there's a segmentation really between like pro play and like casual climbing or like or like play with it within those type of games. Obviously, balancing a game like Smash is, like, so much more complicated, possibly, than what League is, because, like, they have more than 4 abilities and numbers to calculate, right? It's interesting, but, like, the meta or whatever, like, it affects... It's both affected by pro play and also the normal ladder also affects pro play in some way, because like the balance characters for like the entire screen with all those factors in mind. I'm not like I have no idea how much data science has to go into something like this.
Me neither.
It's very
honestly
intriguing for me.
Same, because I compare it to the game I play probably most is Overwatch 2, which I would say is a game that balances too much towards its pro players because the pro league makes money, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In a way that not ruins, but like makes the experience less accessible to new or normaler players.
Mm-hmm.
Still interesting. So yeah, if you want to check out more discussions like that, hop into our Discord. We just hit 4,000 members, which doesn't make sense to me because there's still only like a couple dozen people talking in there every day. But I think it's just because we're discoverable. There's a bunch of people in there who join it.
Mm-hmm.
But just a couple dozen game devs sharing their stuff, talking about why Smash Bros. Characters should have greater discrepancies in their win rates. All right, let's round out the show with a Kickstarter corner and then what we've been playing, and then we'll send you on our way. Did you know you can filter Kickstarters by Canadian made? I just found this recently and have a hyperlink. Oh. I'll put in the show notes for people. But there's a couple closing soon. I want to highlight just 3 here from Cape Breton. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this one, but it's a Mi'kmaq adventure game from Green Robot Studios. Kuntuiktuk would be my guess. Maybe I'll get the Google AI lady to say it there. I do that sometimes when I don't want to be embarrassed. It's, quote, a fantasy adventure game inspired by Mi'kmaq legend and folklore. So this stuck out to me because I lived in Halifax for 4 years, and the Mi'kmaq were the largest, or I don't know, I guess in the news a lot while I was there because of tensions with local fisheries due to a bunch of stuff, and they were burning down all the Mi'kmaq fishing boats and stuff. But they were always in the news and around, and so it intrigued me that there's a game now specifically by a bunch of Mi'kmaq developers about Mi'kmaq stuff. So they just launched their Kickstarter, hoping to hit 50K by June 29th. There is a video for this video game, 2-minute trailer showing off. This definitely also feels like an Unreal Engine game. You want to talk about games that look like the engine they're made in. But the page features a lot of like beautiful Mi'kmaq art, and they explain how they're working with a lot of local artists and people at this this one center they mention. The KGI Wikuam Studios, to get a bunch of people to record the audio in the right language, and they've got money from the Canadian government and the Nova Scotia government. So yeah, it's already got money behind it, bunch of stretch goals. What do you think this game?
It's looking pretty cool. Like I'm just scrolling down in the on a Kickstarter page, and there's like pretty cool looking like 2D art pieces.
Yeah,
they're really like
storyboard almost. The main character Wasuek is entering the spirit world to rescue her brother. Is this the premise of the game?
Yeah, like the some gameplay like made it look like. Oh God! Did you see? Was it in like Marvel What If? I don't remember. There was one like indigenous superhero.
Oh yeah, I didn't see that one, but I saw a couple clips from it. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of that kind of what it looked like for me. I'm not sure if it's the same thing or not. I don't want to assume. That's the thing.
Yeah, there's that one GIF where they put some antlers on and start like flash running through the.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking about. But overall, it's like a very vibrant colors and stuff like that. I really like the.
Me too. We're gonna keep our eye on this one. I don't know if they. I feel bad having to say they're from Cape Breton, because whenever you're covering an indigenous game, like when we cover Achamastawinen games from Hamilton, I want to say like, you know. From Hamilton, but, you know, they called it something else before we got here. I'm sure Cape Breton had a name, the Mi'kmaq called it. But, a game made within Canada, so check that out. Another game on Kickstarter Corner that, oh man, I personally am very excited for this. This is Sunset Devils from Andreas Ilensier, is the creator of the project, but there's a bunch of devs on the game from around. But Andreas is from Vancouver. Quote, "Where legends come to life, a dark isometric action shooter set in the Wild West." This game rips and has a great soundtrack and has good art. And, oh, man, even their Steam page, they have a Steam page live, too, with gifts in the description, of course, because they know what they're doing. But I was going to say, even their Kickstarter page down here is, like in theme. All the headers are the font from the game and crunchy, and it's got the in-game tutorials like you would. It's very nice. They just launched, hoping to hit 70K by June 29th as well, but they're already at 16K. What do you think of Sunset Devils?
Nice. This looks amazing. I love this so much. The aesthetic is so on point. It's great.
It's got a really good UI. Like the bottom... I'm trying to think of a game that is similar to this, because it's got that more intricate art style of like an SNES or slightly later game where there's like a lot more detail in it. What's that Square Enix West one everyone likes? Like, Wild Arms? Is that the right one I'm trying to reference? I don't know the old ones. If Steve was here, he'd say it.
I don't know.
Has that, like, more detailed art style. Or, like, Iconoclast, that, like, indie game that was kind of going for that.
Yeah,
it's good. Very good. I'll plug sorry, go ahead, David.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was going to say, like, I just like really good pixel art, so so it's, like, really great.
I'll plug these in the show notes, Kickstarter Corner. And I was going to plug this other one from the studio that made Ship of Fools, which was a game Steve and I really liked, but it already ended, and so I'll just tell Steve about it next week. And we're already running out of time here. I don't want to take any more of your evening, David. Why don't we just talk about any games we've been playing lately, what we think, and wrap it up.
Sure. Sounds good.
I'll throw it to you. You play any good games lately, David? Anything stick out? Pearls of Wisdom to be gleaned?
I've been playing... I mean, like, I already told you I'm playing Hades recently. I was like, oh, don't want to buy the early access for Hades 2? Like, no, I should get good at the first one first. So, like, I played maybe 20 hours last week, and I only finished one run.
Nice.
So it's like, it's going... So, like, that's going... and before that I played what is the full name, Laika Aged by Blood. I'm not sure if you saw that one.
Laika, how do you spell Laika?
L-A-I-K-A.
The Soviet space dog.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, it is a dog. Like interesting.
Yeah, it's like a motorcycle Metroidvania game.
Oh no, wait! It's better than that. They say Motorvania.
Motorvania, yeah, exactly, right.
This is sick. This is like a Urban Freestyle, like that Ubisoft like bike physics 2D game.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, so, oh wow, this is great.
It's so good. It's so good. It's like the thing that I love about it the most is like how all the systems are so intrinsically tied to one another. Mm. In a way that's like everything is just kind of like flows through each other in a way that is like insanely meticulously thought out. So it's like incredible.
Huh. Yeah, I'm going to put this one on my wish list, actually. So thank you for that.
Yeah, highly suggested.
So you've been playing the first Hades, not Hades 2, to before you get into Hades 2?
Yeah, before I get into Hades 2. I mean, like, I don't get into Kickstarter that much. Early access, Jesus. Yeah.
I get you. I am also anti-early access. I'll play it when it's done. Mm-hmm. And yeah, if you want me to play test it, you can pay me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, but, like, this one might be an exception because it looks like Hades, they released this, is just like it's almost a full game already. It's just like one mm-hmm. set of it is like already done, and then there's like so much stuff to do in there. There's like people say like it has the same amount of content as Hades 1 already.
That's what Eric said last week when he was on. He couldn't believe it. He was like, it feels like when I beat the current content in the game, it was like playing through a full run of Hades 1, kind of.
Yeah, right. So like that's like that's crazy to me. So like if I feel like it and I have the free time, I might jump into that because it seems really cool.
Maybe in between announcing all the winners and the incubator starting, get a couple weeks in there for the summer gaming.
Oh jeez, yeah. I don't think I have a full weekend just to chill from July to the end of August. Unfortunately.
Oh, man. That's the opposite of what you're supposed to do in the summer, David.
Yeah, I know.
I haven't played too much other than I've been doing some IRL gardening, which I've been calling IRL Stardew Valleying on the podcast last week. Eric didn't like that as the descendant of farmers, but it's been hard, but it's cool. You know, a bunch of people in the Canadian Game Devs Discord has actually been helping me learn how to grow basil and tomatoes. There's things I didn't know you're supposed to do. Like, you know, you snip off little points at the joints so that they don't divert resources away from the stems that have the tomatoes growing on them, like that kind of stuff. It's been fun learning how to play gardening in real life.
To play gardening in real life. Oh, I've been playing construction in my backyard for the past 3 years.
Oh, heck yeah. Everything.
It's like when you have everything by hand.
You know when you're playing, you start a board game like a game of Risk, but like you don't have time to finish it, so you leave it on the table, but it goes on too long, and then you need to use the table again, but you don't want to put the game away. It's like that, but you've been playing that in your backyard for a while.
Oh yeah. Like redid the deck, did all like redid like retaining walls, like cement and like
construction
shit, like moving construction. Yeah, like pure construction.
For, nice. Like, IRL SimCity. No, yeah, it'd be more exactly. Like IRL The Sims, I guess. We're one level under.
Yeah, one level under. Yeah, but like if you look at before and after, it's like such a stark contrast. It looks so much better now. But yeah,
excellent. Well, hopefully everyone else has some time to do IRL games this summer, and hopefully everyone can check out the submissions in Eventbrite for the Quiver Games Game Dev Incubator, linked in the show notes, canadiangames.com/events. That's it for episode 240. Thank you so much for coming on, David. I really appreciate it. And is there anything you want to plug at the end of the show other than the incubator and Quiver Games?
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was super fun. Plug at the end. I mean, I guess like my really good friend, Apoorv, he's the winner of the Unity Best Student Game Award with his game Yamentum. They're still working on their game. I think it's already up on Steam for free. So it's Yamentum Mori. So
Ooh, are they Canadian by chance?
Yes, they are Canadian. They're
here, hell yeah.
Here in, Yeah, they're here in Vancouver with me. They're stuck with me over here.
All right, I'll put the link to that at the top of the show notes. Link to Student Game. That's so cool. Congrats.
Yeah, they're so super cool people, and they're helping me with the guild and stuff. They're a pour of as a mentor as well for design. So
excellent.
Yeah.
See, the listeners, there's award-winning people who will be looking at your stuff and helping you make it better. So you should get into the incubator. All right. Thank you so much, so David. And good luck with submissions and the event. And we'll hopefully have you on in the future for plugging another event.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bet you thought I forgot to mention our patrons. You can support us on patreon.com/CanadianGameDevs, where feedback is at the $5 tier or higher. We would like to personally thank you at the end of every episode. Thank you so much, Aaron McLeod, David Nagy, Doug Z, Eleanor, Elizabeth Avery, Kai Hutchins, Nicholas A. Zorko, Sean, and Slaughter and Echo. Leave us a review if you can, at CanadianGameDevs on Twitter.